Dan Moore into the white courtesy phone, please.
I think you have the wrong number.
Is this Dan Morin?
Please hang up your call and try again.
Is your phone white and courteous?
It's not jet black, but it's matte black, and it's nice enough.
Fair enough. You've been in airports a lot lately, haven't you?
Some would say I never left.
Mm. Interesting.
Yeah, I believe that's one of Dante's circles of hell. It's just
airport terminal,
stuck in an airport.
Terminal B. Yeah.
Oh, it's terminal.
Terminal H.
Yeah, Terminal H, the ninth level of the airport.
Yeah, it's a circular terminal.
Not unlike Apple's new campus.
Yeah. Hey, but
Segway. No,
you can never you can never leave. All the flights are delayed.
Yep, it's that Hotel California of airports.
Yeah, that's the Hotel California International Airport.
Oh, ooh.
It's international because they have one flight to Mexico, but only one.
Only one. If you miss it, yeah, look.
I always laughed at these little tiny airports that would declare themselves international airports because they had like a flight to Canada
or something. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, good for you. Look at you.
Aw.
You're branching out. You were, you had an impressive set of photos coming from Seattle. It looks like you had a good time and you saw a lot of interesting people.
I did see a lot of interesting people. It was quite a good time. Seattle is a lovely city, even when it's cold and kind of rainy, as it was most of the time I was there.
Yeah.
That's the Pacific Northwest for you, though. But it's still a fantastic area to visit. I have a lot of friends there, so it's always nice to catch up with them. And Emerald City is a lot of fun. This is only my second year going, but I've enjoyed it immensely both times. There's a great group of people there. It's very welcoming. Several people I was talking to, we were all noticing that we felt like they really do strive for a very inclusive experience. And some of that, I think a lot of that is the industry, or the people at least who show up from the industry seem to be like there were a lot of vendors selling merchandise and comics and stuff like that were clearly aimed at a broad audience or very accepting sort of audience of folks. And I don't know, everyone seemed very nice, and like I think everyone was really friendly. It was a really good time.
I brought up flights and travel because you and I both used Flight Track 5.
Alas.
And therefore, we both got the push notification. I've never gotten this before, I think. An app that I used like a week before sent out a push notification that says, in 3 days, this app dies.
Yeah, I mean,
oh my God.
It was a little Mission Impossible style. Mm-hmm. Like, in 3 days, this app will self-destruct. I'm sad. And I haven't found a great substitute yet. I've been kind of annoyed with several of the other ones that I've tried because none of them provide quite the same elegance, frankly, as Flight Track. Like, yeah. There are things that provide a lot of bells and whistles and things like that, but Flight Track was just, it was really great at exactly what I wanted to do, which was add a flight, get notifications about that flight, and be able to check the status of that flight. So many of the other apps seem just so overly complicated for what I want to do.
Yeah, I've got 6 that I've downloaded so far that I'm going to try out.
I've deleted a bunch that I've downloaded various times. Like, I think I had almost that many, and I've gotten rid of a couple that I just found either seemed like they were subpar or just really irritating.
Yeah, It's harder than it looks. I feel like a lot of these apps, the fact is they've got to pay to have access to the flight data, I guess. And a lot of these apps, they want to do something else for you, right? They want to sell you something else. So it becomes hard to see exactly what they're doing. I'm looking at App in the Air, Tripcase, Google Trips, FlightAware, FlightView, and somebody actually recommended the Kayak app and said that it's actually, I've only ever used it to shop for flights, but that on the iPhone, that it's actually pretty good for tracking flights. So I'm going to try that one too. But, you know, it's yeah, the, oh, let's try it. Let's log in. Let's sign up for 6 different services set a password and all this stuff, which is really annoying.
Let's create a trip. Like, it's like, I don't need to create a trip. I mean, that's nice if you, like, if I really want to, but I'm okay just, I think the biggest, I was complaining to you, I think, when before I left the other week, that one of the apps, I think it was App in the Air, and I don't know if this is their fault or, well, it's partially their fault and it's partially the flight data's fault. I got about 30 notifications. That is not an exaggeration. Telling me that my arrival gate had changed in Seattle, which I guess some people might need to know that, but to me, it was totally inconsequential because it's like, I get out wherever I get out, guys. Like, unless you're going to tell me the flight has changed cities, I actually don't care.
And people are not meeting you at the gate, right? I mean, that's the other thing.
I don't have a connection to make at that point. So, like, that's fine. You might need to know that information. But what I objected to from the app perspective was not having any granularity at all on notifications to be able to say, don't bug me about this. And so I got frustrated and like eventually just like tossed my trip out of it because I was like, I cannot deal with having a new notification every hour or so telling me that it's changed gates once again. It's just irritating. So I was frustrated with the lack of the, sort of customization on that front. The app otherwise looks one of the better ones that I've tried, but that is kind of a non-starter if I can't filter out stuff that is useless to me.
Yeah, and all I want from it, you know, I want notifications of, and to be able to look up without a notification, like, what gate am I departing from? Did the departure time change? Is it delayed?
Right.
Should I not go to the airport? Do I have time when? I want that kind of information. Or if I'm picking up somebody at the airport, I put in their flight and I know they're running a little bit behind and I know when to leave. All of these things are what I want, with some notifications on change. And Flight Track, it did that. It wasn't as good as it used to be.
I agree.
They ripped some stuff out and they added some kind of user interface WYSI stuff that actually made it, I think, a little less functional, more taps to do the same things. But still, it got the job done, and now doesn't feel like it's dead. And these other ones, I'm not sure whether they can do the job or not. So it's a time of adaptation. But so many of them, like Google Trip, actually is interesting because since I use Gmail, I opened Google Trips, and it knows. It's like, oh yeah, you have a trip coming up in April with all the details, and has all of my future and past travel in it because it's all from Gmail, and that's pretty great. Whether it will notify me about flight schedule changes, I don't know, but I do like the fact that most of these services will let you forward your itinerary to them as a way to get it in, to consume it into the system. But with Google Trips, you don't even have to do that, which is, that's cool. We'll see.
If you use Gmail anyways, I don't, so I'm often disadvantaged when it comes to those things. You can still do it. You can do it manually, but I use TripIt, which is very similar, but that, again, that solves a problem. I think that works pretty well when you are on a trip, right? Like, if I'm going to a place and I have a bunch of stuff tracked, I used it in India and Germany because it was especially helpful for my girlfriend and I to coordinate, so we both had all the information. But if I am just trying to figure out when my flight gets in, it's overkill. Or when I'm especially if I'm trying to figure out when someone else's flight gets in, as you pointed out, it's definitely overkill for that. And I don't also have that information. That's not necessarily in your inbox, right? Like, it's not quite what we're looking for in that way. So, yeah. Lots of options here, but none of them seem to quite do what I'm looking for.
Yeah, so we're investigating, both of us, and hopefully we'll get a better idea. And if not before, then I'll use them all on the run-up to my trip in April, and we'll see what it says. But, again, I'm not asking for a whole lot, but having a little bit of this kind of notification stuff is good. Having a nice Apple Watch app would be nice because I did like Flight Track's Apple Watch app. It was super readable. Mm-hmm. If I'm walking down a long hallway to get to like a gate and I've forgotten what gate it is, I could totally just glance and see it's this gate at this time. That was great. So I guess we'll see. It's sad when your trip dies.
Yep.
When your app dies.
Bye, app.
Yeah, it's gone. It's gone. What else going on? There's not a lot going on. I feel like everybody in the Apple world is just waiting for Apple to announce if they're doing a March event, because we haven't heard.
Yeah, it seems like that's it's been kind of quiet, like you said, and I think we are just sort of in that weird stage where Apple's clearly got some stuff they're working on. You may not see it, Jason, but don't make judgments based on what they might be doing that you haven't seen. It's important that you don't do that.
We went over that statement on.
That's why I'm making fun of
Upgrade.
I heard your show.
That was really funny. Like Tim Cook wanted to reassure people without reassuring them again, and so he did again, and it's so bizarre. Don't think something we've done or something we're doing that isn't visible yet is a signal that our priorities are elsewhere.
That is a useless statement. I will just say that is there is no value in that.
If you see me, then,
or if you don't see me,
yeah, that's right. Expect me when you see me. Expect me not when you see me not. But
don't expect that I won't be there because I'm not there yet.
Exactly. It's weird. It's weird. But I think we're all, and I think it's actually weird that there's not even a rumble. I haven't even heard a rumor date for an Apple event.
Well, I mean, let's see. We heard rumor of March, and then there was a sort of debunked rumor I saw floating around within the last day or so about early April. But people were basing that off when the iPad Pro was like shipping or in stock. I don't know, some criminology about the Apple Store ship dates or something, and that does not seem to have a lot of credence to it.
Well,
I
hope it's not early April, because I am taking a trip then. That would be really sad.
Awkward.
Yeah.
I'm just looking. Yeah, if it's March, like they don't have. So today, it's not this week, obviously, unless it's been really quiet. So they got 3 weeks left that they could do it. But if it were next week, it probably would have been announced by now.
Right.
So it's probably either the, you know, week of the 20th or the week of the 27th.
Yep.
And yeah, that's so
if it exists,
next week we'll know. Yeah, if it in fact happens. But
because, you know, anything's possible.
They could just not do anything until June. It's definitely an option. It would be a bummer of an option, I think, for most people. When did they had an event last spring, didn't they?
They did.
What was that?
I think it was like a year ago today, a year ago yesterday. March 21st. Oh, yeah. That was it. I was looking up when it might be, and I thought the 21st, and that's actually when they had it the last time, was March 21st.
Yeah. So could be the 21st or could 22nd be. Or something this year. So that seems plausible. I like that. Let's go with that.
It's just but it's in the meantime, it's just really quiet. There's just not a lot going on the Apple front. And I think I always used Nuzzle as a tool to find out what like people are talking about in my social media groups, and it's all politics stuff. Yep. Which, you know, people are talking about that, and there's a lot of energy being spent on that stuff. And you know, I can't even find tech articles most of the time. It's pretty amazing how hard it is to find them. I reviewed a keyboard this week.
Yes, I saw.
It is so close to being exactly the keyboard that I want, and then it isn't in the end. It's an Indiegogo keyboard, but they're done and producing them, and we'll be selling them on Amazon in like 2 months. But you can, like, it's a marketing thing where you get a discounted price if you order it now through Indiegogo. And it's a pretty good, I mean, it's a mechanical keyboard, so it's a clicky. It's using these blue switches that are like Cherry Blue switches. It's Gateron, so it's like a knockoff of the Cherry switches. But it's if you want a clicky sound here, this is a podcast. It sounds like this.
That's some quality Foley work there.
Right. So, and it's little, it's actually narrower than my little keyboard. And my little keyboard is little. It's an 80% keyboard. It's a little bit taller, but it's narrower, and it's got a full function row, which is great, 'cause mine doesn't have that. And it's got a Mac layout, and it's backlit, and it's Bluetooth, which is really fun. Right. So you have no wires. You can use it with an iOS device. All these things are good. It's got round keycaps inspired by a typewriter, which is a little bit weird, but you can get used to it, I suppose. It is what it is. I typewriter's keys are spaced further apart, but it's splitting the difference of kind of having that look and feel of a typewriter and the clicky sound that you're going for. The big problem I have with it is that all the modifier keys are basically key-sized, with the exception of the return key and the shift key, which is sort of like two of these circles smooshed together. And it's not good to have a tab key that's just a little circle and a shift key that's just a little circle amid all the other little circles.
Yeah,
the backspace key is just a little circle. And, you know, I think you can get used to the keycaps, but I'm not sure I could ever get used to all the modifier keys being that way. And then because of the way it's laid out and how it's all uniform, that also means that the arrow keys are a little bit offset. So the arrow keys are a little weird, where the up arrow key is sort of between the down and right arrow key, one row up. And I don't like that either, that it's not straight up. So it's one of those things that's like, I feel like it's so close. And I wish if they just had a little bit more conventional design, what they could have done. But I mean, this is how it manages to be as narrow as it is that it does not take up the space with tab control, you know, caps lock, shift, control, command, all of those keys that are wider on a traditional keyboard. It just doesn't, they're not wider on this thing. And for me, that was like the deal breaker. It's too bad because, it's really, you know, it looks well made, and I love their trying to get there. It's hard to find Bluetooth mechanical keyboards. There are some, but there are not many.
Yeah,
so
it's
a bummer.
That is a bummer.
But if you like the idea of mechanical keys and little round keys like a typewriter, check it out, because it's, I will say this, it's $74 on Indiegogo, and $99 will be its final price once it's like up in Amazon. And like my little mechanical keyboard that I've got here cost me $130. So, you know, it's a good price. These things aren't cheap.
Yeah, I got to be honest. I like keyboards, but I've never been super particular about my keyboard. Like there are things, I've only briefly tried the MacBook keyboard, which I know engendered a lot of dislike. And I did not love it in the like time I spent typing out in the store. I went into an Apple store the other week and tried the new MacBook Pro keyboard and thought to myself, I don't love this, but I could get used to it. I'm still using a Magic keyboard, Apple wireless keyboard, which I like just fine, actually.
Yeah, the Apple keyboard's,
it's not great, but it's fine.
The Apple keyboards are fine. I just decided at some point, like, I wanted to explore this a little bit because I do care a little bit about keyboards, but I was never, like, deep into keyboard stuff. But I thought, you know, I know people care about it, and I care enough about it that I kind of wanted to dive in slightly deeper. And I bought one, and I just sold that one, actually, because I bought a different one with a different key switch type, which is part of it. So, like, that one that I played earlier, that's the blue switches, which have a higher kind of clicky sound. And I got the brown switches, which are like a clacky sound, which we're going to do some more Foley. Dan, you ready?
Clack, clack.
They're a little less high pitched, a little more, but sure. I love it. It's great. It makes me feel like I'm, you know, when I'm working and writing up a storm and the sentences are pouring out, it's just like, it makes a pleasant sound. My fingers are moving. It's a lot of fun. So, you know, but yeah, I could totally. The funny thing is that the old like Logitech Bluetooth keyboard I used to use, now when I type on it, which is during podcasts usually because it's pretty quiet. Yep. I hate it. It actually has kind of ruined me because people always used to say that the Apple laptop keyboards felt squishy, and I never really got that. Never understood what they were talking about, and I totally get it now. I totally get how it all feels just kind of mushy compared to this. So it's an obscure thing, but I'll tell you, I am not sad that I paid $130 for this little keyboard, because it is a lot of fun, and it's great.
You know what's interesting? I was just thinking about this. You reminded me of a conversation I had with a friend earlier this week. So third-party keyboards, like you said, are pretty popular. And third-party mice, I think, have always been pretty popular. But I've third-party trackpads, I don't know that there's a really good one that people would say is better than the Magic Trackpad.
Yeah.
And specifically, I was thinking about this because a friend of mine, I think I mentioned him on some other podcast, his old MacBook Pro died. And so I was trying to help him get the drive out of that. And then he, you know, basically got a Touch Bar MacBook Pro. And he was saying in the interim, he was using a Windows computer that he had lying around, you know, old laptop or something. And he's like, man, I hate the trackpad on it. I've never found a Windows machine that has a good trackpad. And I was thinking to myself, you know, I totally agree with that. I've used a lot of really crappy trackpads on Windows machines. But just in general, from the third party standpoint, I don't think I've really found anybody who makes a better trackpad device. And this day I've been all trackpad for years now. I have a Bluetooth Magic Mouse that I use like occasionally for, it's like connected to my Mac Mini on the TV, so if I really need a mouse connected there, that's where I use. But for my daily stuff, either on the MacBook or on the iMac, I'm all trackpad, and I've never regretted that. I just really, the trackpad for me has always been my favorite pointing device.
Yeah, I used to use a trackball. So the trackpad is a kind of a logical evolution. I used a Kensington trackball, and I thought it was great. Logitech apparently makes a Bluetooth trackpad for Mac, they say. I don't know why you would buy a $115 Logitech trackpad and not just the Apple Magic trackpad at that point.
I thought I was going to have to replace mine yesterday, actually, because it was just a very staticky day, and I pulled up my chair to the computer, and this happens sometimes, like I zapped the trackpad. And I think it was because there was a cable coming out of the iMac, and the contact from the end of the cable was like touching the trackpad. Cause otherwise they don't think it's grounded. And that like zapped through, and the trackpad turned off. And I was like, uh-oh. And so I ended up like, the light was sort of turning on, but it wasn't connecting. And then I pulled the battery cover, put it back on, and it seems to be working again. But I had a brief couple moments there where I was like, oh man, am I in the market for a new trackpad now? But yeah, so far, so good.
Yeah, I used the Magic Trackpad for a long time, and now I have the Magic Trackpad 2.
Mm-hmm. That's the one with the fake clicky, right?
Yeah, but it's a large surface. I could probably still be using the Magic Trackpad and would be fine, but the Magic Trackpad 2 is nice, and it's rechargeable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. With a lightning connector.
With lightning, yeah. You just pop it in there and it works. I got a lot of lightning connectors. They may serve me for a long time. Who knows?
This is true.
Yeah, so that's what I use now. And that's my pointing device of choice. And I like it.
Yeah, it's the gesture, multi-finger gesture stuff. I think once they added that on the Mac, it's, you know, and they haven't even done that much to change that in recent years. Like, it's kind of been mostly static since they introduced the Magic Trackpad on the MacBook Pro, maybe almost a decade ago now. They haven't really changed anything other than the brief when they changed the scrolling direction.
Sure.
But other than that, like, it's still pretty great. I use the multi-finger gestures all the time to do like the mission control stuff.
Yep.
And scrolling and zooming, pinch to zoom, all that good stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah. Love it a lot.
That's how I do my podcast editing, right? All the zooms are trackpad gestures, and my scrolling is trackpad gestures, the whole thing.
Oh, but that will lead me to a connected complaint, which I mentioned on Twitter the other week because I was editing a podcast on my MacBook Air, I think. And it's the stupid knobs in GarageBand, the skeuomorphic knobs on like the when you use plugins and stuff that puts up like a little fake control panel in the bottom pane, and there's like little knobs if you're adjusting like the gain or whatever, like because I've got a compressor set up. And sometimes if those take focus and you don't realize it and you go to scroll something, it just flips all the it flips the knob like all the way to the minimum or maximum, and you don't notice until you start playback again. And then you're like, oh crap, where is the, like, where did I have that set? And it's just because there's no indication that you have that control currently selected. And this is just me complaining about the skeuomorphic knobs in GarageBand. They're so dumb. They're really dumb.
They're really dumb.
Because you can't use a trackpad like you do a knob. It doesn't actually make sense.
No.
And that's kind of led me down a bigger path, which maybe this is something for a post later on about how GarageBand has felt a bit neglected in recent years. And part of that is, you know, obviously I come at it from a podcast editing standpoint, and it really hasn't done any, you know, it got rid of a bunch of podcast features and certainly hasn't done anything to embrace features that would be really useful. But it's also just that it feels as if it's from a different era to me. Back in the older days of Apple, you know, the dependence on skeuomorphism and on very specific niche tasks. And I really do wonder how many people actually use GarageBand aside from knocking together a really short, you know, song if they're like, oh man, I just want to try this out or something like that.
I don't know. Maybe Apple knows. It's based on Logic now too. I mean, it is just a cut down version of Logic. It's weird.
Yeah. But it's they take out enough stuff that just makes it annoying to use, and then they leave the little stupid controls that are silly.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's not good. All right, well, you know, not a lot going on. I'm glad you're back in action, because, you know, it was lonely without you last week.
Oh, yeah. I know. I'm back. I'm back. All right, now, if something would happen, we'd have some stuff
to
talk about.
Yeah, we're ready. We have bandwidth to talk about whatever happens whenever that happens. All right, well, thanks to everybody out there for supporting Six Colors. This is a membership benefit, so if you somehow found this podcast and have not become a Six Colors member, please rectify that. That's the shame portion of the show. This is for members. Or unsubscribe from the podcast. I actually had an email from somebody who said, I found the podcast. And should I listen to it? Or should I not listen to it? And I said, well, you should pay, or you should not listen. And his response was, okay, I won't listen. And I'm like, all right, that's the deal. So anyway, thank you to those who do not feel shame because you are members of Six Colors. You help us do this as a part of our jobs. And that's awesome because we want to do this as part of our jobs. All right, Dan, are you taking any planes anytime soon?
Friday.
See? So let me know how it goes with some app.
Will do.
All right.
Keep you posted.
Bye, Dan.
With many alerts. Bye, Jason.
Ba-doom.